What's up, everybody? This is another episode of the JTS Podcast. My name is Marcus Modi, alongside my partners, Patton Cook and Gabe Jones. Hopefully, everybody's having a beautiful and blessed day or evening, whenever you're listening to this. But we're going to get right into it. I'm going to pass it off to my partner because he has some mixed emotions about this outcome in the UFC.
Yeah, of course, the biggest fight of the year, without a doubt. McGregor, whenever he returns, that's exactly what it is, and that's exactly what this card was, even though I don't know how many people were really available to end up buying the card because ESPN Plus is having an absolute nightmare. I tried my best, and if Dana White's tuning in, I bought the pay-per-view, wink, wink. So, but here we are, and of course, everyone tuning in knows the outcome of this one. And it was Dustin Poirier and Conor McGregor 2, the rematch that took 7 years in the making. And really, it did not live up to hype. If you're a McGregor fan, if you're just a UFC kind of savant and wanted to tune in for the love of the sport, well, you probably got exactly what you wanted because you got fireworks in the pay-per-view, and that's exactly what happened. Of course, as we know now, Dustin Poirier KO'd Conor McGregor in round two within 2 minutes and 32 seconds. And tell you what, I'd just like to start out by talking about Dustin because a lot of the headlines is going to be about whether or not McGregor is what he used to be. Is he back? But first, I just want to credit Dustin Poirier because to me, I thought he fought a perfect fight. He went with the leg kicks early, pretty much killed that either left or right leg. I can't remember exactly which one, but McGregor, he described it as dead in his post-interview thoughts. And for me, I think Dustin deserves a lot of credit. And right now he should, if Khabib is not going to come back, he should have that interim title shot, at least with somebody else. To me, I'm looking at Michael Chandler, a guy we'll talk about here in just a second. But first, I want to talk to Gabe here. Gabe, is this one more about Dustin Poirier, his performance, or are you thinking more about Conor McGregor and maybe has he fallen off the Max Kellerman cliff, if you will?
No, dude, Dustin did a fantastic job. One thing about the UFC, if you were a fan earlier on, like 90s, early 2000s till now, you see how far the UFC has come as far as individual skills. At first, it was just, oh, we have a jiu-jitsu guy, a wrestling guy, a knockout artist. Well, now all these guys are doing everything. If you go back to whenever Ronda Rousey was making her run, she basically blazed the path for a lot of women fighters, took some time off because she was doing some acting and things. And then whenever she came back, she got blasted and destroyed because the sport advanced so much. And I think that's what we saw from Conor. Conor had his time at the top. He won his rematch against Nate Diaz, went on to fight Floyd for the big money fight, won his hundreds of millions, took some time off, came back, fought Khabib, who is one of the four greatest UFC athletes of all time, lost to him, took some more time, fought Donald Cerrone, then COVID happened. So he had all this time between him actually being in MMA shape versus him now. Not to give the man any excuses, I'm just saying the sport advances. You just cannot just take time off and expect to be as effective as you once were. So I don't think Conor is off any cliff by any means. I think that he loves the fight. I think he's going to come back, fight someone else, and try to just reclimb those UFC ranks. Marcus, do you think Pat, you think McGregor's done?
I don't think McGregor is done. But one thing I will say that's different to Gabe, I like the point that you brought up that he's had a lot of space in between fights. But I know for that Khabib fight, everybody said he wasn't in MMA shape. I think this time around, he actually had time and he actually was preparing himself for this fight. It's just that Dustin played, like Patton said, Dustin played a really perfect fight. He executed well, executed early, and even Cormier said, hey, he was attacking that outside leg. You could see McGregor limping early in that first round. And you could see that it was vivid even more once you got to those 3 minutes in the second round. That's a lot. You got to realize in a UFC fight, 5 minutes is an extremely long time. And when you see him limping, he can't fully go all, because you know McGregor is really known for his kicks. If he's already limping on one leg, it's not a good sign for McGregor, and Dustin took advantage of it.
Of course, he ended up finishing Cowboy Cerrone with one of those patented leg kicks, and that's ultimately what dropped him. And for me, with McGregor, I was drinking the Kool-Aid. The talk all week was, this is the best physical performance Conor has ever fought at. And I thought, to me, I thought he looked like that. I thought coming into the fight, just in terms of a swimsuit calendar, if you will, I thought he looked better than he ever had. Of course, he'd been fighting at 145 at the start, then bumped up to 155 and thought he looked great. But to me, I with you two, Marcus and Gabe, you knock it out of the park. You just can't kind of take layoffs. With Dustin, he's been fighting with the top guys for the past 4 years consistently. He just come off a tough loss against Khabib for the title shot, and he came in hungry and he came in looking to prove a point. And I thought he did exactly that. And one thing that might go unnoticed is many might think, well, Conor never laid a glove on him. I think Conor laid his best shot on Dustin, and he ate it. He ate it twice. He had a right hand, and then he had that patented left that ended up not dropping Dustin at all. So that's one thing. If I'm Conor, I'm a little worried about, because you can't say I never got my shot at him. He got a shot in it. Dustin just kind of ate it. Moving on to my most exciting fight, just because I was not excited with the wallet getting a little lighter after the McGregor fight, and that is Michael Chandler. Of course, Michael, he's fighting out of Nashville, Tennessee. He's kind of in the local area, grew up in Missouri, went to college down in there in Missouri. But for a UFC debut, I can't think of a better outcome. Marcus, what did you think of Chandler, that was really the underdog going in, the odds-on favorite to knock him out in the first round was plus 1,600. Well, if you bet that, you got yourself a pretty penny right now.
I was going to say, you're what we'll call somewhat of a wealthy man coming out for that. Right. I think it was a really good one. Like you said, he was an underdog. Dan Hooker is not a slouch, I will say for sure. It was just, I think it caught him unnoticed a little bit. And Chandler, hey, he got an arm on him. That's one thing I will say. That punch was... it looked like it hurt for me. So, you know, when you sitting on that couch and you see that punch hit and you go, you crunch up a little bit. Yeah. Then you know that took some power.
And Gabe, one final thing before I let you go. A lot of fighters didn't want to fight Michael Chandler because he came in unranked. He came in as an unranked fighter. And Dan Hooker was saying, I get why they don't want to fight him, because this guy's good. So Dan knew what he was coming up against, but unfortunately, these are one of those kind of instances where you're just better off letting somebody else take the punishment. But Michael Chandler, he's reaping the benefits. Do you think he deserves that possible title shot if Khabib doesn't come back between him and Dustin Poirier?
Well, there are a lot of guys in that weight class. For example, Tony Ferguson, he got to fight and he lost his fight against Gaethje, but he was supposed to fight Khabib at first. So, guys, you can lose in the UFC because styles make fights. So I think there are a ton of guys in that weight class that could compete for their title fight. I just love to see Michael get a couple more bouts in before he fights for the title. But hey, if he goes in, wins the title, and then people have to go through him, that would be exciting to see too. Because boy, did he show on Saturday night. He got hands. He got them hands.
Yes. Because that's what I was going to say. I think he might have to have one more fight before he could try to get to that title fight. You get what I'm saying? Because we all just stated, we don't know if Khabib is going to come back. So, but if Khabib does come back, that means Dustin's going to have to fight Khabib. And then you're going to have to fight either Ferguson. So Chandler is either going to have to fight Ferguson before to get to that number two spot. Or he's just going to have to, I think first he might have to fight Ferguson then to get to that title, potential title shot. But I think it's just one more fight right before that title shot.
A fun weekend of fights. The fight that ended up coming out, which got announced, will be fought in March, and that is going to be Francis Ngannou, the knockout, just absolute phenom in the heavyweight division. He's taking on Stipe Miocic, and that's a fight we're all wanting and expecting all summer long. Didn't end up getting announced, but it is announced, guys. Marcus, I'll start with – or Gabe, I'll start with you. Any early thoughts on that one, because the fireworks are there for one of the bigger pay-per-views of the year?
Well, speaking of fireworks, Francis Ngannou has a cannon in both his hands, but especially his right hand, man. He's nuts. Just his power is probably unparalleled in the UFC, but Stipe Miocic is no joke, like, at all. This guy can wrestle. This guy can take you to the ground. This guy got hands, heavy hands. He's one of the only two fighters to ever defeat DC. Like, Cormier has only been beaten by two people. He's held two championships in two different weight classes, only been beaten by two people, and that's Jon Jones, who I have on the Mount Rushmore, and Stipe Miocic, who actually can make a case for being one of those great fighters of all time. So, honestly, I would probably be leaning towards Stipe in this fight just because he has that knowledge and he's skilled everywhere. But, man, don't slip versus Francis Stipe. I'm telling you, do not slip, son.
Like, for me, I'm just hoping that it don't be a first-round TKO. That's like, because either one can do it. Because all it takes is that 1 second. Like, that 1 second. Because Stipe has those hands. And Francis, you already know, he coming with them haymakers. So, like, either way. But, like, I'm going to be with Gabe. Like, I want to side with Stipe because of the experience. But, man, that's one thing specific. It's one thing with the UFC, for more than boxing, it really only takes one punch. And you can see the guy just be on the ground, dazed, and then you know it's over with. That's what happened with this Dustin fight. Like, everybody, we knew that one shot. Ariel, oh, DC, oh, like, we could tell Connor was getting a little rattled. It was just a moment in time. And with this fight, Stipe and Francis, I can't wait.
Uncle Dana helping us out, making the fights we want to see. We're always happy to see that. Word whether or not Connor. He's still planning on fighting at least three more times this year. So he'll have the time to bounce back. Names on opponents not really announced just yet. But that's all we got for the UFC. It's always good to see important fights, like Gabe is saying. Now, one minor thing I would like to touch on before we – an ex-UFC guy is going to be fighting in the boxing world, and that is going to be Ben Askren, one of the worst strikers I have ever seen in mixed martial arts. And right now he's going to be taking on Nate Robinson's father, Jake Paul. So I'm going to go with you, Marcus, right off the bat. I mean, this is a fight. I would have rather seen Dylan Danis. I don't know. You guys probably know who that is. That is a training partner with Conor McGregor. But Jake, he is going to be testing the boxing ability of old Ben Askren. Any early predictions, any early thoughts on this one?
Just expect the unexpected. That's all I'm going to say, because we saw Jake Paul knock out Nate Robinson like it was nothing. Hopefully Ben doesn't have the same reputation as people see, as UFC fans know him in the UFC. Hopefully he redeemed himself boxing-wise. But, hey, I will say this. If Ben gets knocked out, a lot of us wouldn't be even surprised.
Well, for Ben Askren, yeah, he is one of the worst strikers we've ever seen, but he's still a fighter. Paul fought against a basketball player, the one that was very much undersized versus his size and stature. I wonder how Ben will stack up next to him. Maybe Ben will provide a better fight, maybe not get hit as much. But you know what? Just for the heck of it, I want to see Jake Paul beat him too. So then once he beats a real fighter, maybe he'll go in there with a real boxer or somebody that's actually skilled in fighting, and maybe we'll get the Jake Paul versus Conor fight, and then we'll see someone actually tear him a new one. But we'll see what happens. I'm excited. I'm just excited to see the spectacle.
Hey, you just know that the price dropped after Conor lost, so it was $50 million. I think he said for $10K.
Right.
So, you know, Conor. You know, Conor ain't going for no low change. So we Jake Paul gonna have to up that price a little bit again, back to the millions. Cause you know,
yeah, they'll figure it out.
If it ain't $10 million, I don't think Conor gonna take it.
One final thing, and I'll pass it off to Gabe. If
If Ben Askren does lose, I think the MMA community is going to just officially banish him forever, because a bad name will be drawn on the UFC and the MMA community. But nonetheless, that's a fun little fight. We'll see if it does end up happening. Who knows? But Gabe, we've had some exciting NFL matchups. We'll let you take it away, as you got a jersey on who performed pretty well this weekend.
Indeed. Of course, you know I had to come rocking the real number 12 jersey, the real Slim Shady, no, the real Tom Brady, the real number 12, the guy who we saw was going to be the best number 12 to go down in history. I mean, he was already goated, but look, you know what? First, I'm getting ahead of myself. Because first, I'm going to need each one of y'all to apologize to Brady for ever disrespecting
him. Okay.
The show Patton, going against him
let
in
me
the
go
playoffs,
first.
Bro. I told y'all.
Let me go first, because I want to just say this. Tom Brady, I'm not going to apologize, because Tom Brady became Father Tom Brady in the second half. Don't act like he was goated, like he was goated in that second half. Yes, he had 3 touchdowns in the first half, but in the second half, and keep in mind, ladies and gentlemen, let me just bring out this stat. Tom Brady is the first quarterback in 25 years to throw 3 interceptions in one half and win the game.
Yes, and why 3. Did he win? Because he's the GOAT.
No. You better be thanking that defense in that second half, because it was close. And also, you better be thanking that secondary for the Packers, because you want to know why? In that first half, that should have been a pick before Scotty Miller touchdown, and you know that.
Don't act like it was a
GOAT performance. That was not a Tom Brady standard on Sunday.
What am I holding up? A W.
Go ahead and bite off that finger, Gabe. While you do that, I'll go ahead. I laid out a scenario where the Buccaneers can win it. If I remember back, I was talking up the defense, and I thought the way they looked against the New Orleans Saints, I didn't think it was out of the ordinary for them to win it. My only explanation is I saw Marcus and I saw his point differential in the pick'ems, and I got greedy. So I went with him. I was thinking I can't fall even further behind Marcus, and he's led me into oblivion. And right now I'm in a dogfight with you, Gabe, that we'll talk about just a little later on. But first on the game, I'm looking at Aaron Rodgers in this game, and I had a few jokes of fraudulent was the word I threw out there. Of course, Aaron Rodgers is one of the best, I think top 10 quarterback of all time. And I don't think that's saying too much out there for Aaron. But like Marcus was saying, when you have 3 opportunities, your defense gives you the football from 3 turnovers and you're down by 1 score. For a guy like Aaron Rodgers, you're expecting at least 1 drive that you can put together. 2 of them ended in 3 and outs. That's just not good enough for him. Had an interception late in the first half that ultimately ended in the Scotty Miller bomb, where Kevin King is getting absolutely toasted still on the football field down there in Green Bay.
That was a hold, and don't act like that was not a hold. Now, one thing I will say, they was holding all game long, but that was a blatant hold. And that was the button as he was holding his shoulder pad. That's the thing that, like, a lot of corners, they know they can get away with holds if you wrap around the waist. But the guy was holding his shoulder pad, and the receiver's trying to break out of the route, and you're holding his shoulder pad. Come on now, that's an easy call.
It was a tough call. My argument there was just from the angle of the referee. I don't think it was as easy as the replays suggest it to be, because the angle that they would have had, the guy's looking at the line of scrimmage. He's looking at holding on the offensive line, I would argue.
That's the thing. You have the back judge for that. The back judge is supposed to make that call, not the line of scrimmage judge. The line of scrimmage judge and the side judge, that's the back judge that can see that from the angle.
Yeah, but I just think the holding was from behind. So I think either way, it's a tough call. Was it a hold? Yes. Did it get called? No. But tough luck for Aaron. I think it was a risky throw either way that he didn't really need to end up making, and he cost his team. They went up 17 in the end of the half, I think, after that touchdown, and ultimately they just never could climb into it. Tom Brady did just enough in that second half by the skin of his teeth. But I'll say one thing about Tom Brady. He consistently comes out of here with a victory in divisional championship games, and Aaron Rodgers consistently loses these division championship games. Him and Drew Brees only have one division championship in their years in the NFC. Tom Brady 1 year, and he's already eclipsed that. He's tied it at one apiece. Aaron Rodgers right now is 7 out of his last 15 playoff games as he has won. So he's 7 of 8. That's just not good enough for a guy in Aaron Rodgers' stature. Sure, he's had some bad defenses, but this year, this was the year he was supposed to win the Super Bowl. He had home field advantage. He had the fans in there in Lambeau, of course, not the full capacity. I don't know about you guys, but I thought it was an absolute full strength of voice. I thought it was the loudest I've heard any stadium all year long.
I got a question for both of y'all. Well, one thing I want to say before I ask this question, Aaron Jones did have an injury after that fumble that he did. He had his chest, didn't play. So I think that affected them just a little bit. But on that last drive, last Packer drive, Gabe, I know you have your Tom Brady jersey on, but could you take it off for a split second when you answer this question? All right, so if you're Matt LaFleur, are you going for it on fourth down, or are you just going to kick that three? Not knowing, because you know you're going to give Tom Brady the ball back, not knowing that we don't know what the Tampa Bay's last drive was going to be, even though that was a hold and all that, but where are you going for it on fourth down?
So here's the thing that separates Tom Brady from every other quarterback. He just knows how to win. If you see Aaron Rodgers in this game, earlier in this game, he had three shots and he threw it to his best receiver, Devontae Adams, in the red zone. None of the three succeeded. They ended up kicking the field goal. Late in this game, they come down, get three shots in the red zone, I believe, from the Tampa Bay 8-yard line. Aaron Rodgers does not complete these passes. If you look at the replays, twice was he able to likely, in all likelihood, just run it in. Not saying that Tom Brady has the wheels to do this, but Aaron Rodgers definitely does have the legs where he's able to do this. And there was just a missed opportunity. Now, whether I would go for it on fourth down or not, it's still Aaron Rodgers. It's still Tom Brady on the other side. You think I'm giving the ball back to the greatest quarterback of all time with my defense? Absolutely not. I'd rather take my chances going for a touchdown. And or if I don't get it, if I get four downs with Aaron Rodgers, one, I like my chances very, very much. Number two, even if I don't get it, they got the ball at the 8-yard line. So there was no way, zero chance, I as a coach in my hindsight 2020 sitting comfortably from my seat here, that I would ever, ever just kick the ball, just kick a field goal whenever I have the circumstances that I have. I don't know, Patton, am I crazy?
I'm going to play devil's advocate here just because what you're saying there, Gabe, about the three opportunities and you don't get a yard, that's going to throw off Matt LaFleur. He's thinking, well, what's going to make this fourth down any different? You're going to put even more pressure on Aaron Rodgers. If he misses it, he knows that Tom Brady is now going to have the same opportunity. I think it's not as egregious as a call as put forward on social media right now, just because when you look at it, Aaron Rodgers was missing wide open guys left and right. He had his sights on Devontae Adams that entire drive in the red zone. And ultimately it ended up costing him. On that third down, Aaron had a chance to run it into the end zone. I think he's one of the more athletic quarterbacks in the league. He scrambled out to his right, had a chance at the line of scrimmage to run, and said he throws it into the dirt right into the end zone. And in trying to get Titania, the tight end for the Packers. Now, of course, I think it would have been a smart move to go for it because ultimately you're going to need a touchdown to tie this ball game up or take the lead. And the thought there for Matt LaFleur was his defense was stopping Tom Brady and company in that second half, got turnovers from it. Let's trust them one more time. And ultimately, and ended up costing them. But one thing I will say about Matt LaFleur, this is his first time. He was in the NFC Championship last season as well, but ended up, this is one of his first times as a head coach he's had to be put in this position. So I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. He's going to be back. Will he make the different decision? Probably so, but I'll say this. I don't think it's as egregious as many have thought, because I think you could have gone either way, but just the three missed plays on first, second, and third down, it threw him off, I think, and he wanted to end up winning the football game with an Aaron Rodgers drive. Unfortunately, never got that opportunity.
All right, so for me, one thing I would say on that third down, third and goal, at least when people were saying that Aaron Rodgers was going to be able to run that in, you had Dominican Sue like less than 2 yards behind him. And then also you had two linebackers who were at the goal line. I think they was going to meet him before he was going to be able to cross the plane. But it would have been closer. I think he might have got – if he would have got 3 or 4 yards, if that. Fourth and goal at the four-yard line. I like my chances. But even so, the thing is with me is that what bothered me so much is that Aaron Rodgers had no say-so at all on that fourth down call. And I think everybody on the offense was thinking four down territory. And everybody maybe in the world was thinking four down territory outside of, you know, the analytics people. You know how they go. And Matt LaFleur just goes in and said, no, we're kicking the three. Because I'm right there with Gabe. I'm not going to give Tom Brady the ball a chance when it's going to be at his own 25. I like my chances better if he's at the 8-yard line or if he's at the 4-yard line. Because I know I can, if I get three stops and they kick a field goal, I mean, kick and punt it off, I'm getting the ball back at midfield instead of being, if that was going to happen, if you got to stop after kicking the field goal, you was going to get the ball back and have to go the full length of the field instead of going from at most your 40-yard line with
I'll go say one more thing, and I'll let you guys go. I think the combination of having that fourth timeout, he had the two-minute warning still there for him. At the end of that third down, I think there was 2:05 or something left on the clock. So his thought process was, even if they get a first down, I still have the timeouts to get the ball back. But ultimately, the defense just crumbled, and I guess we can move on to this a little bit later on, but that pass interference ultimately ended the ball game.
Well, also with those four timeouts, whenever you do kick the field goal, you kick the ball, kick the kickoff, you kick that ball out of the end zone, the clock stops, and then they have to run a play. If you don't run that, by them not kicking the ball out of bounds, they get it, they run the clock down past the two-minute warning, so they don't get the extra time. I think they took the offsides so they could get, like, the extra time out. So, yeah.
No, just, but
– I mean, it was a coach. But, what was it?
Because what happened was –
the returner slipped down right before the two-minute warning ended. Whenever they did the offside was whenever on first down they did the pass to Chris Godwin when he got 9 yards, and they smartly took the offside. So, effectively, they didn't lose a timeout. They didn't have to take a timeout. But ultimately, I didn't think it was as bad as everyone thought, but I get the disappointment from Packers fans because it's easy being a Monday morning quarterback, if you will, second-guessing that decision.
Now, Pat, I mean, Gabe, I want to ask you this. Was that actually a hold at the end of the game?
Yeah, but they were doing that all game. So you let you do what you've been – you players get more angry whenever you're officiating one way in the first half of the game versus, like, the last quarter. If you start changing up calling ticky-tack fouls, players don't like that. We don't like that as fans because we're like, well, you didn't call it earlier in the game, so why would you call it at the end? So, sure. But at the same time, they had plenty of the Packers had plenty of opportunities to go down and score. And that's one thing that I always say about the Saints and some of their egregious playoff losses. Oftentimes, yes, they may have gotten screwed by a call here or there, but ultimately you had other opportunities to score. You just didn't. As far as number 12 goes, Aaron Rodgers, I think that he actually did play a good game. He did make some mistakes, but I did see a ton of drop balls from his receivers, like at least 4 or 5. So I don't place all the blame on him at all. I think they played a pretty good game. They just didn't make it happen.
I think it was a hold personally, but I'm with Gabe. They've called it similarly the whole time. One thing I will say, just when you grab the kind of stretchy undershirt that he had, it looked a whole lot worse kind of in real time than it did, because that shirt was stretched out a good 2 feet in the air and he's just kind of holding on for dear life. So it was a tough call. The referee threw the flag, and ultimately Tom Brady has earned those flags, and we've seen him far too often in that Patriots jersey that Gabe has got on. So if I'm the Packers fans, I can't be surprised that because that was called, because it's been called the past 10 years in Tom Brady's career, wrong or right. You guys can argue that over, but we've seen it a lot, so I don't think it should be a surprise to anybody.
For me, I agree with y'all saying that it was a hole. It's just that, man, you can't throw that. And then you threw the flag late. It's not – so you second-guessed it. That's another thing. Yeah. Do I want to throw a flag or not? Because you almost kept it in the pocket. Then you was like, ah, you know what? Forget it. Let's get this game over with and threw it down.
Refs don't like affecting the game like that. They really do not like making those calls. But sometimes, I mean, it just is what it is. Like, they should have in that Saints game. But, we all know the Saints-Rams game. It don't matter how late that flag should have came. That flag should have came.
Also, another thing was that the receiver somewhat tried to sell it too. Because, okay, his T-shirt was getting ripped. But he had to just somewhat flop like that as well. Because his T-shirt was getting ripped.
Gotta do what you gotta do. W.
You know what? Let's go ahead and send it to a quick break. And then when we come back, we'll talk about the Chiefs game.
All right. On the other side of the NFC, we had the AFC Championship. We had two MVP runner-ups going against each other in Mahomes and Josh Allen. Now, on this podcast, did anybody go against the guy who was the better quarterback?
No.
No, you didn't. You should have learned on the NFC side. But anyways, that's besides the point. Kansas City faces off against the Bills. The final score, 38-24. Now, guys, the Kansas City Chiefs got down early in this game. First quarter, the final score of that quarter, 9-0. Did y'all think that it was over with for the Chiefs at any point in this game? I'll start with you, Patton.
Absolutely not, because my team had a 10-0 lead and it mattered absolutely zero. So I've just come to expect the Chiefs want to try and test themselves. They want to go down early, and if they can pull ahead late, great. If they pull away and end up blowing out the Bills is what they pretty much did, although the score doesn't reflect it. I never felt any pressure with my Chiefs pick, just because the way they've been playing all year long, maybe they haven't been clicking to the standard that we maybe hold them up to last season, but the defense right now is playing at the level of the offense, and that is a scary thought, because the number two scoring offense coming into it, the Buffalo Bills, they got held to below par offense, and I thought Josh Allen looked pretty rushed in the game, was constantly scrambling out of the pocket, and although he can do that, the corners that the Chiefs have right now, they thrive on those scramble drills. They keep with their wide receivers. They don't leave up any deep shots to Stephon Diggs, and ultimately that's where they want to go. The Bills aren't a big dink and dunk team. If they can do that, but ultimately they want to pass it down the field with John Brown and Stephon Diggs. They've got Dawson Knox, a very good tight end from Brentwood Academy. But in this game, they just got locked up from that second half on, and ultimately they never could get the rhythm. And against a Chiefs offense, no matter what, even if you slow them down early, they are going to find their rhythm in the second half. I don't care what it is. Andy Reid is one of the best coaches coming out of the second half. You kind of just tell that coming off byes. And that's kind of what I equate it to, coming off a bye and coming out of halftime. You can make adjustments. You can make some different moves and different parts work. And they're doing exactly that. And the Chiefs, they ultimately move on to their easiest AFC Championship game, because in this game, I don't think they ever felt threatened, even after the fumble from Mecole Hardman out on the punt.
I wasn't, like, shocked or nothing, because this was the fourth straight playoff game, I might add, that they was down double digits going back to last year. Well, not they technically wasn't down double digits, but they was down two scores last Sunday. And one thing I agree with Patton was that defense. One thing I will say, I remember on the last part I was talking about how the Chiefs is going to play defensively against the Bills. They did the exact same thing Baltimore did. They did a lot of cover one, and they were sticking on the guys. And Stephon Diggs, he was getting doubled, but everybody else couldn't get a lot of separation like they was accustomed to. So Josh Allen somewhat struggled. 28-48, that wasn't Josh Allen throughout this year, because we're accustomed to him throwing. We knew that he was going to throw 45 to 50 times, but being almost under 50% was something that he wasn't accustomed to when he was his percentage, passing percentage was close to almost 60 to 70.
Indeed. No, Josh Allen, he definitely did not have one of his better games. Stephon Diggs, before late in that fourth quarter, where I think he caught two, maybe three passes, but pretty much the entirety of the game or the bulk of it, he only had four receptions. Cole Beasley was trying to do his best Cole Beasley impression from the Dallas Cowboys, but he was doing all right on the Bills, getting open, catching some passes.
Cole Beasley was playing with a broken fibula. And had seven receptions for 88 yards. Hey, that man's tough. That man's tough.
Indeed.
If I have a broken pinky, I might be down for the count. He had a broken fibula. I ain't risking it.
No, I would have been done. But no, let's talk about how great these Chiefs receivers are. Kelce and Hill, back-to-back games, both getting over 100 yards. Holy smoke. I mean, this could be one of the great trios in all of NFL history. I mean, just from what they've done since Mahomes has come into the starting position. I mean, we talk about how great Mahomes has been. He got his MVP his first year starting. He got his Super Bowl MVP the second year, and now he's on his way to his third Super Bowl. Well, you can't do that without weapons. Kelce, I believe he's trying to make a case for being one of the greatest tight ends ever, and he's just like the X factor of X factors. If he catches the ball in any kind of space, just a minute amount of space, that dude might be taking it to the house. Marcus, do you think that he's one of the GOATs?
Oh yeah, Travis Kelce is you could put him top five almost right now if he left, because
yeah.
Hey, this man, just keep in mind, if it wasn't for Week 17, he was going to lead the league in reception yards, in receiving yards, and receptions. Both categories as a tight end. Never been done before. And, yes, you have Patrick Mahomes, but, hey, that man is still deadly. So, and then you got to think about Tyreek Hill. The man topped 21 miles per hour on his longest run last Sunday. That was – the fastest in playoff history. That's that next gen stat for you. But hey, I don't know as a defensive coordinator, I don't know who you're supposed to stop first, Tyreek or Travis, because either one can kill you for $150 if needed.
And the scary thing about them is both get open quickly right off the line of scrimmage. You really can't press either one of them. For Kelce, he can kind of just push you off. He's got the strength and speed-wise. He's not Tyreek Hill, but he's like a lot of receivers. He's got the speed of a mid-tier wide receiver, but he's got the build of one of the better tight ends we've ever seen. And for Tyreek Hill, I mean, what more can you say? He can do it in all avenues. I remember his first year with the Chiefs, whenever it was Alex Smith, they would put him in at the running back position and just hand him off and let him work. I think he had like a 60-yard touchdown run against the Titans that season whenever they came up against him. Those two guys, I mean, they're just built perfectly for Patrick Mahomes. And frankly enough, and fortunately enough for them, Mahomes isn't going to start making the real top-tier money until 3 or 4 years. They can tie those guys down in the meantime, and they'll be able to keep them around for as many years as they want with Patrick Mahomes. And that's got to be such a luxury to have, and just credit to that Chiefs front office, because they built this team from top to bottom. Of course, getting rid of Alex Smith, kind of the safe option. He's going to get you into the playoffs each and every year. Well, they've hit a grand slam about eight different times over with Patrick Mahomes, and they're reaping the benefits. And I think if they continue on the next 2 years at the very least, I think they're going to be right up there with the three best trios in all of football history. And the numbers in the Super Bowls and the playoff wins they're putting up there, it is hard to argue that for sure.
Just realize that within 3 years, Patrick Mahomes has been to back-to-back Super Bowls and already has an MVP and already has a ring. Hey, that man, just know he's locked in for the next 10 years, and good luck. That's all I can say to
it. And it was close in that third one against Brady. If he would have won that coin toss, although Brady, he put some voodoo on the quarter that they flipped, he would have had a chance to go 3 for 3. But right now, I agree, it's
it's good luck for everybody in the AFC and the NFC if you end up facing them.
Indeed, indeed. Well, that was the division. Well, the conference championships.
Ooh, wait, now, next that's week, one thing.
What's up?
Did y'all see Stephon Diggs standing out and just standing there after when they was congratulating the Chiefs? Hey, I one thing I do want to say is I think the Bills have a future, and like they was just, you know how like certain teams are just too young for the moment. And I think that was with the Buffalo Bills. Like they got to that point, but they just wasn't there just yet to go over the top. And I think the Bills right now, they have the right mindset moving forward after this loss, because they wasn't far. It wasn't just a blowout. But they know that there's a lot to improve on. The Bills, I know Gabe didn't like this, but the Bills going to be scary in that division and in the playoffs, sir. You got to watch out for those guys.
They going to be all right. They might have the division right now. But just know, a few years from now, Patriots going to be back on top. Trust and believe. But no, that was the conference. Those were the conference championship games. Next week, we're going to hit the Super Bowl just to give you an update on Buck the Line. So, Marcus, he had a huge lead. Sir. And that lead has carried him off into victory land. He will finish with the number one spot unless he want to just throw out like a 5-point game. We get 5 points between the Super Bowl, but of course not. We're not doing that to him. Marcus, congratulations on your number one spot. Now,
yes, sir. Business. I just want to let the listeners know that I told them since once I took the crown that it wasn't leaving me. And it came to pass. I'm just going to talk my stuff. That's it. I told him we're going to keep it going.
Well, now I'm glad that you got your victory speech out. Now down to business, Mr. Cook.
The real tie question game. Is, will he go against Tom Brady?
Dude, it's tie game 59-59 between Patton and I. The game is basically the GOAT, the greatest quarterback of all time, a man that has brought me major joy in my sports watching career, versus a guy who I honestly, truthfully believe is the future, will be the future greatest quarterback of all time, and Patrick Mahomes. And what he has done so quickly over his NFL career is basically unparalleled. So this is going to be a tough decision for me. Well, how are you looking at it going into this next game?
Well, of course, we are down to the final 2 weeks. Of course, the Super Bowl, not this week. We'll have the media day next week, and then that's ultimately when we will decide who we want to pick. But I'm with you, the GOAT right now, and I think Mahomes, if he can continue on, God willing, a healthy career for him, there's no reason why he can't end up overtaking Mr. Thomas Brady. One thing I will say, I think there's some fraudulent voting counting going on. I'm not sure what happened this season. I'd like to pull a Mr. Donald Trump and just say stop the count. I say stop the count. Joking aside, Marcus earned it this year. He had some dramatic hits in the final seconds, and I just never could get that perfect score to go my way. But right now, me and Gabe, we're slugging it out, and I'm going to do whatever's necessary. I might pull a Dan Campbell and just bite off the kneecap of Gabriel Jones to get out of here with second place, but I'm going to do what it takes. And rest assured, when we do end up taking my picks, it's going to be a lock. So everyone putting up a dollar or two on FanDuel, let's ride.
All right, Marcus, take us out of here, buddy.
Well, just waiting. Boy, what you got? What you got, man?
One more thing. A year and a day ago, one of my favorite basketball players of all time, Kobe Bryant, he passed in a helicopter crash. I wanted to say thank you to Mr. Bryant for just great, great enjoyment in my life watching him play, watching what he did after the game, writing stories, just doing the details. Those were super duper awesome to watch on ESPN Plus. So I did want to say my condolences to that family, to all the families that were in that crash. but especially to Kobe Bryant, one of my favorite basketball players of all time. Rest up, big dog.
Rest to Kobe, Gigi, and all the 9 members who passed away on the helicopter crash. Also, rest in peace to Hank Aaron, the legend.
Yes.
Those Braves fans know what I'm talking about, the legend, the one and only Hank Aaron. But we got a lot in store. We got next week, Super Bowl preview. Then also we're going to hit on some college basketball because, hey, on tomorrow, Austin Peay going to be playing Belmont on ESPNU. Might want to check that out as Belmont is undefeated right now. Austin Peay, you know, got Terry Taylor, OVC Player of the Year last year, and a future draft prospect next year. But everybody should tune in on ESPNU. I believe that is 7:30 or 7 o'clock or 7:30. Y'all should tune into that. So we got a lot in store for you, but hopefully we hope that you enjoy this podcast as these guys are going to be battling it out through their minds on next week, trying to figure out who's getting second place. But just know that crown is already there. But thank y'all for listening. It is another episode of the JTS Podcast.